You're listening to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. 3 decades ago, Thomas Kuntz killed 24-year-old Mark Santos. It was 1987. Two groups, one from New Bedford, one from Brockton, had a fight. When it happened, Kuntz, a veteran of the Marine Corps, fired a gun out of a car window. The shot hit Santos. Kuntz was convicted of first-degree murder and sentenced to life in prison without parole. 31 years later, Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker commuted his sentence in Baker's last days in office. It was one of the first commutations of its kind in decades. Last year, Kuntz left prison a free man. Santos's family did not support Kuntz's release. And now, Massachusetts Governor Maura Healey is pushing to reform clemency further. Her new guidelines likely will help more people like Kuntz get a second chance at life. I spoke with Thomas Kuntz earlier this morning. I told him I wanted to understand his journey, and I also wanted to understand that Mark Santos was not here for the conversation. So I began by asking him if he thought that he had deserved to be in prison.
Yes, there's no question that I'm culpable for the killing of Mark Santos, and my condolences to the family, I'll start off by saying. But I made some bad choices on the night in question that caused the young man to lose his life and caused the heartbreak of two families, and that would be his family and mine. So that is without a question that I have to take responsibility for that.
So while you were in prison, you were sentenced to life without parole. You took so many hopeful steps. You invested in yourself. You invested in other people. Even with that end state out there, how did your understanding of who you are, what life is, change and evolve? And what led you to such acts of hopefulness under those circumstances, Thomas?
Well, I mean, I always had goals. I always had dreams of being something. I love helping other people. So that was just natural for me. So going into an environment that I had pretty much never been into, seeing so many young people, so many broken people, doing some work within myself in programming, I got a chance to hear some stories. I got a chance to deal with my traumas. And as I was hearing the traumas of everybody else, I realized that I had a natural gift to be able to counsel, and people were seeking my guidance. And I actually found my purpose behind prison walls, and I started taking my eyes off me and started putting them, you know, kind of on those that could use my help and use my counsel. So I found out that the more that I served, the more that I helped, the better that I felt. And it just became a part of the ministry behind prison walls for me.
You serve youth now. You said you found your purpose. What is your purpose?
So I am the reentry program manager for the Center for Teen Empowerment. I am helping young men 16 to 30 that are coming home from the carceral system, whether it be DYS, state or federal prison, or the House of Correction. I help them to transition back into the community successfully by offering them restorative justice circles. We pay them stipends to be a part of those circles. And we also offer them handyman skills, culinary prep, and things that are going to be able to help them to get some tangible work tools, workforce tools, and to be able to go into the job forces to sustain themselves.
So that is amazing work. What's the purpose underneath it? What's your purpose?
Well, my purpose is that I see so many young black and brown men behind prison walls or even, you know, dying in the streets. So if I can keep either those men from going to either one of those situations or going into any one of those situations, then my job is complete as far as I'm concerned. But I just want to deter young people from really making the bad choices that I made that, again, cost a young man his life.
Take me to the moment, Thomas Kuntz, when it actually hit you that you were going to be free.
Well, that was a long journey, so I'm not sure exactly when, but it probably was more or less when I hit the door, to be honest with you, because my fight started a long, long time ago after many appeals, after another commutation, even before this process where I thought it was going to happen. And, you know, even with the governor pretty much taking up to 2 days before he, you know, the deadline to make the decision, you know, it was kind of like, is this going to happen? The governor's council, 10 hours, so I just would have to say for me, it wasn't even real until I probably walked outside the prison doors And even at that point, I don't think it even hit me. So it just took a little bit of time to adjust.
Was it day or night? Was it sunshine? Was it rainy? What did it feel like to walk out of those doors?
It was surreal. I was greeted by some great friends who stuck by me for many, many years. But it just, I don't know, I guess I had prepared myself for all the things that people said it was going to be. Oh, you're going to be nervous, you're going to be anxious, and it was none of that. It was just surreal, the experience coming out and to feel peace in leaving prison walls.
Was it the first time you had felt peace since you entered prison walls?
No, actually, I discovered peace behind prison walls. My faith has kept me through this whole ordeal, through my mother's, the death of my mom, through the death of my brother, and through 30 long years in prison of any obstacle probably that you can imagine that happens in prison.
So I am not challenging your peace or your atonement or your faith when I ask you this. I'm really not.
Sure.
But I also want to know, when you found your freedom, was there any part of you that was troubled or haunted by the fact that the Santos family didn't want you to have that freedom and it was going to haunt them that you did? How did you think about that?
You know, the mother expressed, her feelings toward this commutation process. And, you know, in that, I shouldn't come home if her son doesn't come home. And, you know, I really felt for her. She certainly has a right to feel that way. I took her son. I took a brother. I took, a uncle. So I can't say that I understand what she's going through, but I just understand that she has a right to feel the way that she feels. And, you know, that's what I would say about that.
Thomas Kuntz, what do we gain with clemency? As a society, what do we gain when we pardon someone, or in your case, we commute a sentence? What do we get back or get anew?
Well, in my case, I would say that you get an asset to society, right? I come home, I have pretty much taken responsibility for my actions. I have come home and contributed to society by helping these young men stay out of prison, or at least offering them some of the tools that will keep them from going into prison or committing crimes out here in society. I just can add to, rather than you paying, tax dollars for me to stay in prison and pretty much do nothing, I think you can see that I'm coming out here and contributing in a great way that's really helping for public safety, for one, to keep young black men and boys, or whatever the case may be, from committing those crimes and from seeing a early demise, I guess I could say.
What's the most precious part of everyday life for you now?
Getting up every day and not having to stand for count, getting up every day and not have to be told what to do, and just living life to the fullest. You know, every day is a blessing for me, so I don't take anything for granted. A lot of people complain about things that I see as trivial to me because, again, I was looking at a natural life sentence behind prison walls. So I have no complaints as long as I get up every day and have breath in my body.
Thomas Kuntz's life sentence for first-degree murder was commuted by Governor Charlie Baker. We spoke with him earlier this morning. Here with us now, WBUR senior correspondent Deb Becker and Patty Deaginess, longtime attorney and current member of the Massachusetts Bar Association's Clemency Task Force. Both have been following the subject in the state for a long time. Patty, thanks for coming in studio.
Thank you so much for having me and for covering this really important topic.
And Deb, it's great to have you on the line.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So, Patty, you worked with William Allen, who had his sentence commuted alongside Thomas Kuntz. Let me just get reactions to what you just heard from Thomas.
I smiled a lot, if you noticed,
as
you were playing the recording, because his experiences are so similar to William's. But it brings me such happiness to know that these men who deserve to be in the community are. I'm just thrilled to death that there's now hope and the possibility that good people who've done good work can now return to the community and be accepted by the community.
And I'm cueing in on good people who have done good work. It strikes me that you believe if one has, while incarcerated, that merits a commutation or maybe a pardon later.
Oftentimes it does. Some of the best people I know are clients. William Allen is one of my best friends, and he always will be.
Who is William Allen?
William Allen.
William Allen. Sorry.
Yes. His yeah. sentence Thank was you. Commuted when, yeah. when Thomas's right. was. He's a wonderful man. I'm filing later today a petition on behalf of William Florentino, who I would love for that guy to be my neighbor. That's kind of my personal view is, do I want this person to be my neighbor? And there are plenty of guys that I represent or know who are in prison who fit that category.
So, Deb Becker, I'm interested in sort of a compare and contrast between what we just heard from Thomas Kuntz and what the rhetoric was for and against his commutation when it happened, and other rhetoric or for and against commutations as you've been reporting it.
Mm-hmm. For the most part, I think that the commutations that were recommended by former Governor Baker, there wasn't a lot of opposition. You mentioned the Santos family in the case of Thomas Kuntz, and they did not attend the hearing for Thomas Kuntz's commutation before the Governor's Council, but they did write letters expressing their opposition and saying that they didn't think he should be released. But interestingly, the prosecutors involved in both Thomas Kuntz's case and William Allen's did recommend commutation and did support that. So I think that there was almost unanimous agreement that incarceration was not benefiting anyone in those cases.
So, Deb, I'm going to stay with you for a second. One of the things that I actually had to do to prepare for today's segment was understand better three words: clemency, commutation, and pardon, because I didn't understand that clemency is kind of the broad thing, and then pardon and commutation are two kinds of clemency.
Right. A pardon, if someone is pardoned, the charges are essentially removed. It's as if the offense had never been committed by that person. So you're pardoned. It's gone. A commutation basically releases a petitioner from a sentence of incarceration. So you've served your sentence, even though it was 10 years, you've served five, you've proven that you're rehabilitated, so you can get out. And in Thomas Kuntz's case and in William Allen's, they were sentenced to life. They both spent decades in prison, and their sentences were commuted, meaning they could be eligible for parole, and then they could be released on parole.
And clemency is the umbrella under which this happens, and it falls under the purview of the governor of Massachusetts. Is that right, Deb?
That's right. So someone petitions for clemency, and Patty probably knows this process better than I do. She's been through it. But someone petitions for clemency, and then the governor makes a recommendation. It goes to the advisory board of pardons, and the governor, recommendations are made as to whether this person is a candidate, and then the governor's council has to sign off on that. And once all of those steps are undertaken and approval is granted, then someone is determined, can then be considered eligible for parole.
We're speaking with WBUR senior correspondent Deborah Becker and Patty DeJunis, who's a member of the Massachusetts Bar Association Clemency Task Force, looking at moves that Governor Maura Healey is making around this process of clemency, which can lead to a pardon, it can lead to a commutation, a couple of other permutations as well, but we'll stay there. Patty, so Governor Healey comes forward last week with a bunch of guidelines that are pretty significant. What strikes you? Do you feel like you could tell us a little bit about those guidelines? Do you want me to do that part, or do you feel like you could do that part?
Sure, I'm happy to do that. As a member of the Clemency Task Force, we had written some proposed guidelines and met with members of Governor Healey's staff, and were very encouraged at the time with the conversation, which was about modernizing the guidelines and taking into consideration science and giving some timelines. William Allen waited 7 years to find out whether he was getting a hearing. Now the turnaround time is 10 weeks. One of the biggest changes is that Governor Baker, his guidelines really made it virtually impossible for someone who was still challenging their conviction or asserting their innocence to get commutation. And Governor Healey has explicitly addressed that in these new guidelines.
And says it's okay. You could be challenging your conviction and still be eligible.
Absolutely. Other big changes are that Governor Healey is interested in fixing systemic injustices, not just a narrow focus on how many programs did you do. But all of the surrounding circumstances are laid out very clearly so that petitioners, many of whom are pro se, know what type of information to include. That's
what
big.
Does pro se mean?
They're representing themselves.
Okay.
Very few lawyers have experience in this. When William and Thomas's sentence were commuted, they were the first in 25 years. So not a lot of lawyers are engaged in this. There's no money for this. So for a long period of time, I was doing William's case pro bono.
And Patty, the new guidelines also take into consideration brain development, age, and the history of racism and race in incarceration in the state as well, do they not?
They do. And I think the race is really big. And I've recently discovered that the Department of Correction might be misreporting the race of people who force is used on. So I think that deserves a really, really close look. Another issue that I would like to see Governor Healey's administration address is the lack of programming in prisons. Thomas and William were really lucky that they were serving time in institutions where they could take programming and improve themselves, learn new things, but that's not available in most institutions.
So I'll note, I am not familiar with reporting on the discovery of the potential of misreporting on race and the use of force. Deb, is that something that you're familiar with any reporting or information on?
I've read about it, but I can't say I'm extremely familiar with it.
Okay, just flagging that for the listeners is why I'm not asking you follow-up questions on that in particular, Patty. But Deb, I'll come over to you now. I do want to pick up on one other thing that Patty said, which is 25 years in between. There's a history to that that has to do with previous governors having felt that they were politically burned by past decisions under clemency.
That's right. Our history has been politically fraught for people. I think a lot of folks know the name Willie Horton, and they talk about the so-called Willie Horton effect on releasing people from correctional institutions. And just in case you don't know, Willie Horton was serving a life sentence. He did not return to prison after he was furloughed in 1987, and then he was convicted of assaulting a man and raping the man's fiance. And that happened under Governor Michael Dukakis. And it became a major issue when Dukakis ran for president in 1988, and that still has lingering effects today. And then in 2011, under former Governor Deval Patrick, five members of the parole board were essentially forced to resign because the board voted to release a man named Dominic Sinelli. And about 18 months after he was paroled, Sinelli was involved in a robbery and the murder of Woburn police officer John McGuire, and Sinelli was killed in that shootout. So politicians don't want that to happen again. They don't want to be blamed if someone is released and then commits another crime.
And Governor Maura Healey, though, Deb, has really been sort of unprecedented for 30 or 40 years in the number of pardons and moves she's made in her first term and early in that term.
That's right. Typically, there have not been a lot of petitions for clemency, certainly not approved by a governor early on. After Willie Horton, there was basically a standstill, not just in clemency, but in what had been a robust system of work release for prisoners or furloughs. And former Governor Baker's recommendations to commute Thomas Kuntz's sentence and William Allen's sentence in 2020, that was the first time a governor recommended a commutation in 6 years. And as Patty mentioned, for someone convicted of murder, it was the first time in a quarter century.
So let me turn back to you now, Patty. You're on the clemency task force. What about victims' families? Where do they figure into this? What's their voice and what's the consideration?
That's a tough one from my perspective, because I'm representing the incarcerated individual, and nobody's getting commutation unless they are very sincere in their remorse, unless they really understand why they did what they did, and because that means that they're not going to do it again if they get that. So I hope that victims' families understand that when commutation is granted, these people are safe. They've really have established that pretty clearly.
And then last question to you. What more needs to be done? What's next?
We need to see more programming in prisons. Restorative justice is explicitly mentioned, I think, twice in the governor's guidelines, but it's only available in one prison.
What is it?
Restorative justice is a program. Tom Kuntz is responsible for bringing that into the Department of Corrections, and it's a system. There's multiple phases. The victims' families come in and talk to the prisoners about how they feel. So it really teaches compassion and understanding the impact of their actions. So I understand that it's very painful for them to go through this process. Some victims' families understand, like with William Allen, they forgave him at his hearing. That was really powerful. So I do hope that victims' families are able to heal. I know they're treated respectfully throughout the process.
And Deb Becker, in 5 seconds or so, what are you watching next?
5 seconds. Well, there's legislation that's been filed that would end life without parole sentences for people convicted of murder. So that would allow offenders to be eligible for parole after 25 years. And according to statistics, Massachusetts has the highest number of prisoners serving life without the possibility of parole sentences in the country, tied with Louisiana. So it'll be interesting to see how that moves forward.
All right. WBUR's Deb Becker and Patty Degenis, member of the Bar Association's Clemency Task Force. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.